I'm Theo Greenlee, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUCB, where I work in on Alaska, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Dave Waldron journeys into the world of the Nutcracker. Its 35th year of bringing wonder to the stage begins this weekend. We'll learn about the history of the beloved performance, dive into the music, and reflect on the magic the show brings to the holiday season. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation with directors from Valley Performing Arts. We'll hear about their current double feature of A Charlie Brown Christmas and an onstage radio play of It's a Wonderful Life. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're looking ahead to what will be the 35th year of the Nutcracker Ballet in Anchorage. The show, which takes place at the Performing Arts Center, has become a tradition of many Anchorage residents as a way of celebrating the beginning of Christmas season. Later on today's show, I'll be speaking with two members of the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra, including a musician who plays the Celeste. And don't worry if you don't know what that is, because I didn't either. But right now in the studio, I'm happy to have with me Mitchell Hansen and Catherine Easley with the Anchorage Concert Association. They are the group responsible for coordinating the Nutcracker performance that many of us get to enjoy this time of year. Mitchell and Catherine, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. So Mitchell, I just want to start with you real quick. The Nutcracker performance that takes place at the PAC, it features the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra, also members of the Alaska Dance Theater, but its main cast is the Eugene Ballet Company, right?
That's correct.
And how long has that partnership been in place?
So Eugene has been here on and off over the last 35 years, about nine times. They've been here for the last 3 years. This will be the fourth consecutive year that we've had them up. But there's been a whole variety of different ballet companies that have been a part of it over the 35 years that we've been presenting it, with Cincinnati, Pacific Northwest.
Oregon Ballet.
So is this the longest tenure one of them has had, this 9 years?
Typically, they were 3 years.
Okay. And so why so long? What's so great about the partnership? What's working for you all?
They are the most flexible organization. They really like working with our local dancers that are coordinated by Alaska Dance Theater. Mm-hmm. And they are always willing to invite more in. Originally, we probably utilized 60 local dancers. We're at 130 now.
Wow. That's a big number. Well, and how unique of a thing is that? You know, we have our local symphony, right, and our dance theater getting this chance to perform with a national act and showcase their talents to a packed house, pretty much. How important is that and how unique is that, especially for like these young dancers with the Alaska Dance Theater?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge part of, you know, why this show is, I think, such a big deal to us and to the community. There's a lot of ballet companies out there that, you know, they have their production and it's very great and they like to keep it the way that it is. And so,
yeah,
Eugene has been just so wonderful in being willing to work with, you know, the local kids and us and the symphony. And that has been the recipe for the last 35 years that we've been doing this, is that it's always included some amount of local dancers. So they get to experience not only what it's like to work with a professional ballet company, but, you know, step onto the stage of the Atwood, which holds a special place for a lot of us here in Anchorage, and, you know, get to experience that in front of their community and their families and, it's really amazing. So yeah, we're super excited. This year is the record of 130 local kids across the six performances.
Wow, that's a lot of kids. And I know they have a lot of roles they play, but the one that always sticks out to me is when all the kids rush out of the dress of the giant woman with the big dress.
Mama Ginger.
Mama, is that her name? Okay.
Not for every ballet. Okay. Different companies name it something different, but I think for this one, it's Mama Ginger.
And the bonbons.
Kids. So what do they think of it? Are they freaked out? Are they excited when they realize that they're going to be performing at the Performing Arts Center and to a full house, right?
They are incredibly excited and very well rehearsed. Mm-hmm. So once they move into the theater, they get more opportunities for rehearsal with the actual Mom and Ginger because they're faking it in the studio right,
right
now.
Yes. I wonder what the decoy
excited.
Looks like.
Yeah.
Well, Catherine, you've been the events manager, right, mm-hmm. For the Anchorage Concert Association for a long time. Were you involved by chance with that first Nutcracker back in, it would have been 1990?
I did not do any Nutcrackers back then, probably closer to 93 or 94. Not the first one. And I was not an event manager. I was a stagehand.
Oh, okay.
So I was a member of IOTC, Local 918, and usually worked on the prop crew. Eventually, I was doing Nutcracker every year, and I haven't stopped.
Right.
Just the job changed.
Well, and how has it progressed? What did the old Nutcracker shows look like compared to today?
Well, I mean, every company has a different designer, a different choreographer, and so they all had vastly different takes, some very traditional, some a little bit more eclectic. As you said, Mama Ginger became something else under different companies' visions. Mm-hmm. So some more elegant. This has a pirate theme for the Mouse Kings and stuff, so they take mm-hmm. they have very different takes. So it's not so much as time progressing, but just each company's vision.
Mm-hmm. I have this memory, Catherine, growing up in Anchorage in the 80s, of the Nutcracker on Ice. Do you remember this, the Nutcracker on Ice? I don't know if it was an Anchorage Concert Association thing. I just remembered it was a big production that we used to do. I think it was at
Sullivan.
I want to say UAA's campus, but maybe.
So that would not have been presented by us. Mm-hmm. But we have done a few shows on ice, on the Atwood stage.
Really? On yes. the Atwood stage?
On the, they were not Nutcracker.
Yeah. What were they?
Dorothy Hamill came up and performed. And then we had a Russian ballet company. Again, this is going back way back in my memory, and I've done so many shows. Uh-huh. I could be lying to you all.
What are the like the waivers and liability forms like when you're dealing with a production on ice?
They're no different than anything else. Okay. We just carry a bunch of insurance to make sure that nobody gets hurt. And if they do, we're covered.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, has the show always been as popular as it is now, I guess? Were there those growing pains? Because it feels like it's a real big event.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the Nutcracker, even before we were involved, like there's always been versions of the Nutcracker happening in town, whether they were at West High, there's still, you know, several other companies locally that do them here in town. And I think there was a little while where, for whatever reason, you know, it was before my time, that sales dipped a little bit, but it's always been sort of a staple of the season. Coming out of COVID, you know, we had 2 years where we didn't have a Nutcracker. And ever since then, we've really seen like a renewed enthusiasm for it. That first year coming back after the shutdown was our record attendance and sales year, and it's stayed pretty close to that ever since. So I think, you know, like a lot of other things in that time where you realize what you missed when you didn't have it. And
yeah.
Ever since then, you know, people have really had so much enthusiasm for it.
Yeah, Alaskans in general seem like they're always hungry for live performances, mm-hmm. especially national acts that we don't get a lot of compared to other states. And it seems like the pandemic really did wake people up and make them start coming out and record numbers. I'm glad to hear that it's been the same for the pack.
Yeah.
And for you.
Yeah. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, it's been a tradition, you know, for generations. People have grown up going to the show and now we're bringing kids to the show, or even, you know, there's people who have danced in the show and now have their kids dancing in the show. So it's really cool to see how it's just become really timeless.
Absolutely. Yeah. What have some of the biggest behind the scenes challenges been? Something that, you know, we wouldn't know as a casual observer of putting on a performance of this scale.
Well, the first challenge is that we're in Alaska.
Yeah.
So the companies that are coming up have to fly up. Their sets have to be shipped up. We've got to make sure that that all happens. And just for everybody's knowledge, we do have the set. It landed last week. So logistically, there are bigger issues than a company driving to the next town to put up their show. Then there's the coordination of all of these local dancers. The company flies up a choreographer, and they go to the auditions that happen in September, early September, and they audition all of the local kids for all the different roles in September. And from that point on, those kids are rehearsing their roles. And that is the role of Alaska Dance Theater, is to make sure that all the kids that come out from the community, from all the different local dance studios and audition, ADT manages that.
Yeah, not every kid is an Alaska Dance Theater, you know, student necessarily, but Alaska Dance Theater comes together to coordinate all the kids from across the community, no matter what, you know, school, or, you know, if they're not a part of a school, if they're just getting into it. So it's really kids from all over the community. You know, in previous years, we've had people who have driven in from Soldotna every week to be a part of these. And
I think we had a Clara from Juneau.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. We're getting statewide representation there. Mm-hmm. Well, Mitchell, how does the Nutcracker stack up against the other annual shows the Anchorage Concert Association puts on? Is this like the flagship show as far as yearly traditions go for you?
Yeah, guys? I mean, as far as shows that we do every single year, it's really, you know, the Nutcracker, the Moth, and International Guitar Night are our staples that we do every single year. The Ugly Sweater Holiday Show has become one. This will be the fourth year that we're doing that. And there's other ones, you know, that we bring back from time to time, like Cirque Holidays. But the Nutcracker really is the annual staple of our season and something everyone really looks forward to.
Well, I'm not aware of the Ugly Sweater one. You said fourth year. What is that about?
So that one has been, we bring in a touring group who sort of anchors the show. And then we work with a lot of other local performers who mix in and get to work with that band. For the last 3 years, it has been the Portland Cello Project. And so they came and worked with all sorts of different local performers like Ashley Young, Chris Hawk, Aspen Yarrow. We've had high school students who have been a part of it. It's been a really cool show. And this year, for the first time, it's not Portland Cello Project. They were up here a couple weeks ago doing their Radiohead show.
I heard about that. Yeah.
So for the first time, we will have Alfonso Horn in the Congregation, who are Sammy Miller in the Congregation is a band that was up here last year. Sammy's not going to be able to make it, but he has another host stepping in to run the show.
So Mitchell or Catherine, either or, what have you heard from Alaskans about why they keep coming back to the Nutcracker every year and why it has sustained its popularity for so long?
Well, it's a huge tradition for a lot of people. One of the stories that I love the most is one of our longtime families that are associated with the Concert Association. When it was a members-only organization, there was no staff. It was all volunteer.
Oh, okay.
There were longtime family traditions to come to the Nutcracker and also work the Nutcracker. And even though this volunteer, Stephanie Neal, passed away probably about 15 years ago, her family still comes every year and works the Saturday matinee Nutcracker store. And we hope to have them for many more years.
So they're the ones that sell the Claire ornament and
yes,
like the mouse swords.
Swords yeah, and okay, tiaras. And,
okay, yes. Yeah. Yeah. We always frequent that stop if we do go to see the Nutcracker.
Good.
Yeah, well, what about for you, Mitchell? What has your observation been, I guess?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the people who come back every year. It really is the, you know, their tradition of it, whether, you know, you started coming as a little kid or moved here, you know, at a certain point and discovered this thing that has become a part of your life. And it's a festive time of year. You know, the tree lighting happens in town square in between the two performances on Saturday. And I think it's just been so amazing to see people coming back year after year and experiencing this thing that really brings us all together and kicks off the holiday season for us.
Just on a personal note, what does the Nutcracker mean to you? Do you have memories of it growing up? And do you still love it as an adult? Like, what is it like for you to see it and to be working on it behind the scenes?
Yeah, I mean, I remember going as a kid, it was always something, you know, you get dressed up for and it's this big special occasion. And I don't think any of that magic has been lost, you know, being a part of it behind the scenes. It's so incredible to see how it all comes together. And every year I still get dressed up and go to it and, you know, have a little bit of a different role, not sitting in the seat the whole time. But yeah, I mean, it's just magical.
What about you, Catherine?
Well, I never saw it as a child. So the first time I experienced it was working it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So I only saw it from the side for years. and I finally got to see it from the front and it was like, oh, totally different look. I think for me, one of my favorite parts of putting on all and dealing with all the logistics of this whole event is our dress rehearsal night. It's sponsored by ConocoPhillips. It's their community dress rehearsal where we are able to invite all these different social services clients. So Hope Cottages, Senior Centers, Access
Awake,
Alaska,
Catholics,
Awake,
yeah,
all
so
these different organizations that support people who would never get to see this show, could never afford to see this show, get to come that night. And at intermission, we serve them cookies and soda and sugar them right up so they can go into the second half in a coma. but it is just so much fun to see all this part of the community that wouldn't get a chance to be there. And that's my favorite tradition of the Nutcracker.
Great answer. Thank you, Catherine. I want to thank my guests, Mitchell Hansen and Catherine Easley with the Anchorage Concert Association. Thank you both for coming in and getting us ready for Nutcracker season.
Thanks for having us. We're excited that it's finally here.
Me too. After this short break, I'll be speaking with two members of the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra and diving into the music of the Nutcracker. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're looking ahead to the 35th year of the Nutcracker in Anchorage, courtesy of the Anchorage Concert Association and the Performing Arts Center. The shows will be taking place this weekend and will also coincide with another annual holiday tradition in the downtown area, and that's the lighting of the town square Christmas tree. And I'm very excited because right now I have in the studio with me two members of the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra, and we're going to dive into the music of the Nutcracker and what it is that makes it such a unique and special treat this time of year. Nick Cooper is the executive director for the orchestra, and Susan Wingrove Reed is the principal pianist. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate you having us.
Excited to talk about the Nutcracker. It's such a glorious piece.
I totally agree. Susan, I want to get to you in just a minute, but Nick, we'll start with you. How important is this Nutcracker performance and the now 35-year-long tradition we have going in Anchorage and with the symphony orchestra?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tremendous, tremendous opportunity for us to reach so many people around the community. This is a really unique and wonderful opportunity that allows us to reach out and invite audience members who would not normally go to your typical classical concert with our Bach and Beethoven and those sort of things. It's also a unique opportunity because we get to experience and work with our other resident companies that are part of the PAC. So this is produced by the Anchorage Concert Association and with the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra and the Alaska Dance Theater. So we get to work within our own community as well as bringing in the community to us.
And Nick, you're new to the role, right, at the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra. What brought you here and how long have you been here now?
Sure. So I started way back as a music teacher. I taught middle school music primarily, band, orchestra, choir, jazz band. I did the whole thing. I did my time. So I did that for a few years. I got really good at kind of the management, nuts and bolts sort of it. So I decided I'd go off to grad school and get my master's degrees. And then I was hired immediately out of there for the Virginia Opera. Eventually after that, I worked at a local nonprofit here as their CFO, the chief financial officer. And finally, a dear friend of mine pointed out that, you know, hey, this gig at the Anchorage Symphony is open. Would you be interested? And I'm like, well, wow, that's my dream job. That's what I've always wanted to do, right? So I, you know, tracing back my roots, like when I went to grad school, I got a master's in arts administration. That's what I wanted. So I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm going to try this. Sat down with Sherry Riddick, who is my predecessor, who was at the Anchorage Symphony for 37 years, brilliant human being, wonderful, wonderful person to work with. And she has kind of, over the past few months, shepherded me and mentored me through this process that I'm just super grateful for. And now I get to do stuff like this and work with wonderful people and work with wonderful musicians and kind of get to see how it all comes together.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, so new to the role, but no stranger to music at all, it sounds like. Well, I want to talk about, you know, the Nutcracker specifically. How much time is spent, Nick, rehearsing this piece? What are some of the behind-the-scenes challenges to putting on a production of this magnitude?
Sure, sure. So for that, I'll actually turn to Susan and have her talk about our rehearsal process.
The Nutcracker has a special life with the orchestra because a number of the players have done this for a long time. But then there are always new players who have never played it before or played it with the Anchorage Symphony. So our rehearsals, there's four of them for the production that we do. And there's a read-through rehearsal with just the orchestra and the conductor getting to familiar with each other. And then the week of the performances, we have rehearsal Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night. And at least two of those are with the dancers so that we are playing, getting used to the tempos. The focus is on putting the dance with the music. So right. You really need to come prepared for that first read through and then boom. And it's a challenging piece. And for those that haven't played it a lot, it's always like, oh, you've really got to be prepared. And some of the tempos are lightning fast and it's just so joyful. And it's a piece everyone knows right. So well. So it's important to nail it. So.
Yeah, they'll know if you mess up. Well, thank you, Susan. I want to definitely turn to you now. You're a pianist with the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra. Do you play other instruments as well?
My category is actual principal keyboard player.
Oh, principal keyboard.
Because I play synthesizers, depending on the kind of music there is, with patches of sounds. So you use a synthesizer. And then I also play the celesta, which is a unique keyboard instrument that Tchaikovsky discovered a version of it in Paris in the 1800s, just before he was finishing the score.
Right.
And it's like a music box that looks like a little keyboard. It's wooden in a box shape, and it's a shorter keyboard than a piano. And instead of hammers hitting strings inside the instrument like you have with a piano, the hammers hit rods so that the sound is very tinkly. And the other challenge, though, is that I was just with Maxime Landau, who was the pianist for the symphony, our most recent concert. And he said, oh, my God, Susan, you play the celesta. He says, I fight that instrument. I hate it when I have to try to play it because the touch is really difficult. You have to use a lot of wrists and you have to play harder to get the sound. And then also with nuance to play a little softer, like in the case of the Nutcracker, the most famous celesta solo of all time is the Sugar Plum Fairy.
Right.
So okay. Everybody knows that tinkling, but
yes.
You want to do it with lots of nuance and then make sure all the runs that are super fast are really clear. So
I'm glad you brought up that instrument, and I'm glad you brought up how to pronounce it correctly. I've been saying celeste, so the celeste. Let's definitely talk about that instrument because even for people that haven't heard the name, they've heard that instrument, right?
Yes.
Definitely, I would say the most popular song in the Nutcracker, just personally, is the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies.
Sugar Plum Fairies. And if I might mention, another reason people are aware of the celeste now is because the second most famous solo is Hedwig in the Harry Potter films.
Oh.
Is the featured instrument, who is always Hedwig the Owl, is the celesta. And it's a massive solo, and everybody knows it when they hear it
right.
from the Harry Potter movies.
Well, let's go ahead and give our listeners that a little taste of that song that we know they know well, but let's go ahead and take a listen. It is such a magical sound. Even though we've all heard it so many times, it just has like this oozing with magic and wonder. It's like if fairy dust had a sound. That's
exactly
what the cello sounds like.
And in fact, the harpist who has played in the pit for many years, she won't be able to this year, unfortunately, but we're kind of colleagues next to each other over the years. And she has a little daughter who set through her first Nutcracker a year ago. And she came at the intermission so that I could play a little bit of celeste for her to hear. And so then when the Sugar Plum was danced in the second act, Megan reported that her husband said that her daughter turned to me, she said, "That's Susan on the celeste."
Nice. What a great story. Well, and Susan, you mentioned, and it's my understanding that when the Nutcracker was performed, this instrument was not very well known. It was new for most people.
Brand new. So, and Tchaikovsky knew right away, this has to be included in the score.
These people's minds must have been blown when they heard this instrument
exactly.
for the first time. I like that even though in this song, other instruments join in later and give some big flourishes, the celeste is always the star of the show.
That's the big deal. And there's a section of the Sugar Plum Fairy Dance where it's just the celeste by itself doing a very virtuosic thing. And it's like, I always get to that point. It's like, big breath and go for it. So...
I don't know about, you know, the majority of my listeners, but I always thought that that sound was a xylophone. And I feel like a lot of us did,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Is that a common misconception?
Similar or the bells that are in the orchestra that I used to play in high school band.
Yeah.
The shorter version, but it's the metal bells that other people think that it is. And when they see the instrument for the first time, it's like, oh.
They're really surprised.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
they don't envision a piano-shaped instrument
exactly.
making that noise. Yeah. What's the energy like, Susan, down there in the pit, the orchestra pit? I always imagine people are really serious and poised, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it's a very different opportunity than our normal performances on a concert stage because we are in the pit. So we can react with each other a little bit and the audience isn't aware of that. But they're smiling and, you know, foot tapping on that was a really good solo or things like that going on. But there are certain relationships that develop too about, you know, uh-oh, here comes that flute trio that drives them insane. It's so difficult. So everybody's like, you can do it, you can do it. And the harpist and I over the years, I'll share a secret tradition that's developed. There's in Act Two, the Waltz of the Flowers has a huge harp solo that begins it. And it's very difficult and it's gorgeous. So I go to Alaska Sausage every year and buy several boxes of Mozart chocolates. And then in the pit, every time the harpist plays that Waltz of the Flowers and finishes the cadenza, etc., I take out a Mozart chocolate and hand it over to her as a present, as a prize. And sometimes she'll look at me and she'll go, I didn't earn it this year. And I said, yes, you did. And so the chocolates are being exchanged. Those traditions are really fun. It's hard work in the
yeah.
pit, I will say. The performances, we do two a day for 3 days in a row, and that's a lot of playing. And as I mentioned before, the score is difficult. So you have to be focused, even though it gets tiring. The comments that I always get from colleagues, and I feel the same way, is that it's just, we love playing it. And we love doing this for the community. And so we may get tired, but it's worth it. And to see the beaming kids smiling in the audience and the cheering and to just feel the audience, which musicians always feel in a performance setting, that makes it so wonderful and magical, to go back to a word you've used.
Yeah, I always think of magic when I think of the Nutcracker. And I'm glad you brought up the difficulty of it. Because when I listen to it, it sounds so technically daunting. And I mean, right from the start, even with the overture, Tchaikovsky comes out firing. Let's go ahead and play a little clip of that there. Moments where you actually get to take a breather and get to relax in a
there
piece like
aren't
that.
Jenny, but the thing is, it's just such glorious music. And Tchaikovsky was a genius about orchestration. And so the use of the instruments, the colors that change from measure to measure and sequence to sequence, it's just, this whole piece is just perfection. Which, ironically, is interesting because when the Nutcracker was first performed in 1892 and for years afterwards, it really wasn't done very much and it wasn't liked. And it wasn't
I heard it was not well received.
Yeah, it wasn't well received. And it's his final ballet and it was one of the last things he wrote. And it wasn't until around the 1940s in America when Walt Disney did the movie Fantasia and incorporated sections of the Nutcracker in it. People were like, whoa. And then Balanchine in the New York production that became just television helped popularize it. And now all over the world, ballet companies do this at the holiday season. So Tchaikovsky never got to see what a standard this has become for joy for audiences and for orchestras and dancers.
Absolutely. What is it about the Nutcracker that makes it so special? Because, you know, Tchaikovsky is a very serious Russian composer, but the Nutcracker is just full of whimsy and like playfulness. Are there instruments or musical elements that make it feel more fun than his other pieces?
Well, it's hard to compare it to anything else because particularly in Act One, you have the story where there's then the battle scene with the Nutcracker and the evil Mouse King and the broken Nutcracker and Clara's relationship with the Nutcracker and all of that. But then Act Two is something completely different where she goes off with the Nutcracker Prince and then experiences a series of dances that are done in different styles with names that originally are things like coffee and tea and chocolate. But in the story itself, Spanish dance, Arabian dance, Chinese dance, the Russian dance, all of these things. So they're just like little vignettes of completely different kinds of styles of dancing and of music. My personal favorite that I live for every performance and rehearsal to be able to sit and listen to is the Arabian dance. It is so beautiful and just pulls you into the writing is spectacular. And again, the use of instruments and featuring different instruments in each of these dances is really cool.
It has like almost hypnotic sound to
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Well, Nick, you're a musician yourself and a fan of music as well. What about the Nutcracker speaks to you, whether it's what makes it magical or what makes you love it?
So I have to agree with Susan on a lot of it. The orchestration of it is very unique and really wonderfully done. And when I talk about orchestration, it's what instrument plays when. and how many play, that sort of thing. And it creates this color. We heard it in the overture there, this color or this rhythmic feel to it that really the overture does a wonderful, wonderful job of setting us up for what we're going to see.
Do you, either of you have a favorite Nutcracker song, not to play, but just to enjoy?
The Arabian Dance is my favorite to hear.
Yeah.
And then I always celebrate the overture because it's just, here we are. This is it. We're in it and we're going for it now.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go with the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy as a clarinetist, as a bass clarinetist, and how if you're keen to that kind of sound that comes out while the celeste is playing, that almost duet kind of thing going on there, you can listen to it again, and that's the bass clarinet down there way low. So I'm a little partial on that. I think it's brilliant writing, a brilliant color that comes out right in that moment. I'm just a little biased to that.
Well, it's my favorite song too, Nick, and I know that's probably a very popular answer and a common answer, but I don't care. It's my favorite one. I get tired of hearing it.
I work with students a lot still, especially out West High School.
Yeah.
And the kids, some of them who don't know me at the beginning of the year, then as we're getting closer to the Nutcracker season, I'll play a little bit of the Sugar Plum Fairy on the piano. And I say, hey, come see the Nutcracker. You're the Sugar Plum Fairy? And so
that's cool. Their eyes just light up, I bet. Susan, I was listening to this podcast about the Nutcracker. It was great. It's called Cracking the Nutcracker. Anyway, they do a deep dive into why it is unique and the sounds in there. I think the guy spends 20 minutes talking about a tambourine.
Oh,
but,
well.
But he says that the real magic in this piece is the percussive instruments that you don't normally hear, like the glockenspiel and the triangle and the tambourine, all these instruments that you don't normally hear taking center stage, if you will. They really like power through their pieces. Do you notice that at all in the pit?
Absolutely. And they are punctuation to action in the drama of the Nutcracker that, again, Tchaikovsky uses so many percussion instruments, and the celeste is counted as a percussion instrument.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's an instrument that is struck to play. So technically, celeste and piano are percussion instruments.
Perfect, yeah.
So as part of that family, it's really fun. They are really busy, and they're across the pit usually from us. A year or so ago, the percussion was moved, very traumatic in the pit politics, but they were moved to the other side. And the problem was we loved the instruments, but the harpist and I were right in front of them. And so when the bass drum was being blasted and other things like that, we were just holding our ears because it was deafening. So we had to work a lot on balance that year. But now the percussion is back on the other side, and we're more surrounded by the strings for the harp and celeste. So that sometimes happens in a pit. You're like trying to find the right spots so people have room to play their instruments, which is always a challenge for percussion in a pit. But then there was the reality of we're getting blasted out of our hearing with being, I was right in front of the bass drum. Bam.
Oh, that's a bad place to
be. So, and it wasn't personal, but it was just, I'd walk out of there going, whoa, this is not the peaceful, beautiful Nutcracker of my dreams. So, but I love the percussionists. They're doing a great job, and they are really busy in the entire piece, which is really fun. Yay, Tchaikovsky.
And I'll add that one of the unique things about being a percussionist in an orchestra is you're not just back there playing one instrument, mm-hmm. right? If you go to a show and you're watching the, you know, on stage orchestra, you will see percussionists moving back and forth. They are working out there. So they may be playing triangle 1 second, crash cymbals another second, bass drum another second, and they're just moving. So it's one of my favorite things to watch, like a major orchestra. I'll keep an eye on the percussionists in the back because it's just cool to see.
So last question to both of you. What are you looking forward to most for this year's Nutcracker, the 35th Nutcracker of the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra and the PAC?
Well, it's definitely worth celebrating that anniversary and that there's this continuity in the community, this feeling of we're doing it again. And it's just a beautiful tradition, and the players get excited about focusing on this Tchaikovsky score and all of that and being in the pit to be together with this piece and make it alive for every performance with the dancers. So there's an energy that I look forward to.
What about you, Nick?
Yeah, so I think, and this is for every performance, I love the fact that I get a unique view of the orchestra because I'm sitting in the audience. The orchestra's in the pit or they're on stage. I get to sit in the audience. So I get to experience the reaction of the audience, of the kids that are coming in. I see them at intermission or I see them after the performance and they're aglow, full of joy. Adults too. They are just a different, they become different after a performance. And it's just so amazing to see time and time again that I get the opportunity to see that. I wish the musicians would run out really quick after playing a show just so they can see and experience this. It's amazing.
Well, I want to thank both my guests, Nick Cooper and Susan Wingrove Reed, both with the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra. Thank you both for coming in and helping us kick off the holidays and celebrate the Nutcracker.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This is really fun. Thank you.
After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Directors Lisa Denblaker, who's directing the Charlie Brown production, and Sean Groshon, who's directing It's a Wonderful Life. Denblaker says she has a long history with the beloved Charlie Brown Christmas special.
I grew up watching the Christmas special. We watched all the, like, It's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, the Thanksgiving one, and then we watched the Christmas one. So I love Charlie Brown Christmas. I love just the coziness of it. I love putting it on at Christmas time, either in the background, I'll sometimes watch it multiple times, but it's been fun trying to connect that to the stage because they are very similar. There's not a lot of differences in the production versus the show, the TV show, but I really want it to have the same feel. I want you to come in and be able to go, oh, this is the same, not the same exactly, but have the same feel and be like, oh, I know this show. I want people to come in and be like, oh, I recognize this. This is the same feel that I get from watching the TV show. I want them to get that from the stage production as well. And so I've been trying to teach all the kids, like, you got to go a little slower, slow down, and let there be space for, like, the music and... because I feel like the music's very important in the stage production and in the TV show. I feel like it's such a classic soundtrack. So, yeah, it's been fun trying to bring it from the show to stage.
Yeah, I feel like the vibe is like a warm blanket or something like that.
Exactly.
Well, you mentioned working with the kids and stuff. I mean, what's that been like with getting the cast? And I mean, are the kids, how familiar are kids with the original? I mean, I feel like it's on all the time, but yeah, are they connected to it?
Yeah. So honestly, we came in for like the first week of rehearsals after we did auditions. We set the cast. They came in for the first week and almost all of them were like, oh, I watched it right before we came in today. I wanted to be prepared. And I was like, oh, I haven't even like rewatched it yet. And they were way ahead of me. So they are constantly in rehearsals going, but in the TV show, they do this. Are we going to do the same thing? And I'm like, so it's a little different because it's staged. So we are changing some bits. And they're like, but why are we changing? And I'm like, because you have to change it. It's coming from a TV show to stage. We can't do the same things. But they're very excited. They all really love the show. They love the characters. And they're constantly talking about, like, why are we going to do it the same way the TV show does? They're holding me very accountable to make sure that it is the same. So.
Good. Somebody's got it, right? Mm-hmm,
definitely.
What's the age range of the cast? Is it all youth actors?
Yes. So we only have kids. Our youngest actor is 9. She plays our Sally. She's very adorable. And then our oldest, I think, is 15. So that's very young.
Would this potentially be a lot of these performers' first time on stage?
Yes, we actually have a majority of the cast has never performed on stage before. We have a couple veterans. Our lead, who's playing Charlie Brown, Connor, he actually was the lead in Sean's show last year, so he's got some experience. And the gal who plays our Snoopy has done the same show, actually. So she also has a lot of experience, but most of the other kiddos have never been on stage before. So it's actually been interesting. Me and my stage manager had to have a lot of conversations of, like, teaching them just basic stage etiquette and what it looks like, just like stage left, stage right, because they don't know any of that. So yeah. It's been interesting to have to teach them as well as like direct at the same time. So it's been very fun.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, like, Sean, you can comment on this too, but I feel like that's probably a big aspect of what you folks do, right?
It's
like
huge.
Working with the kids, get them interested,
adults
get
as well.
Trained, yeah. First-timer adults.
Yeah, first-timer adults, reminding them what, you know, that you have an audience, and to face the audience, don't turn your back to the audience, is like one of the biggest things that people just forget, because they get into, you know, acting and they don't think, oh, I'm not facing, they can't see my face right now. And, you know, making turns, and there's a whole lot of little technical things that that are really important that we get to teach, and it's exciting. It's fun. Yeah, I had a show last year that was almost all kids as well, and it's challenging, but it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I feel like there's got to be certain aspects where you're like, wow, I wish this could go smoother, but then other aspects where it's like, wow, I wish adults could maybe behave a little bit more like this.
The kids really, really get out there and do it. And it's so much easier to bring somebody's performance down a little bit than it is to bring it out of them. So kids are really great in that aspect, is that if you tell them, I want this big, they'll just explode. And you're like, okay, maybe not that big.
I feel like kids don't have the same like reservations that adults do sometimes to be big and be sometimes do things that might feel embarrassing. Kids don't have that same like thing that stops them that adults do. They don't get embarrassed quite as easily. So they're very much just, they go for it. They're so big in all their movements and in their volume. So it's really fun working with kids. They bring such a different energy to the stage.
You've kind of touched on this and stuff. And Sean, we're going to get to It's a Wonderful Life, I promise. But I mean, what's the general cast and crew vibe when putting together just like a super wholesome production like this, where it's not like somebody's breaking their heart on stage every night? You know, maybe it's emotionally taxing, where this one's just like wholesome, good time.
It's really nice. It's a lot lighter. There's definitely some shows that it's a lot more intense. The show that VPA is putting on right now is one of those, with just a lot more like, it's heartbreaking. It's more of a tragedy.
Radium Girls.
Yeah, with Radium Girls. Yeah. Whereas this show is a lot lighter. It's full of joy and just, it's so Christmassy. Like, that's the whole vibe of the show. So I honestly really love it. I feel like sometimes when you have an intense heavy drama show itself, that can lead to more intense heavy drama backstage, but especially with kids too, they don't have as much drama, so it's been pretty easy. The kids just have come into rehearsal, they just have fun, and it's been pretty smooth sailing for the beginning, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see the mood in Lace's show, because up until now we have had very separate rehearsals.
Yeah.
And then next week we'll be rehearsing in close to the same space. So it's going to be super fun for me, because I get to see what's been going on with her show, and she gets to see what's been going on in my show, because we've been in separate rehearsal spaces right now.
Well, and I mean, that's kind of the perfect transition, because it's kind of a double featurey type of a thing. So how's that working with, you know, a traditional stage production of Charlie Brown Christmas with this live radio production of It's a Wonderful Life? Well, how's that working?
So what we're going to be doing is It's a Wonderful Life is going to be the first act of basically two acts. And we're going to come out and we're going to do the radio show. Very, very minimalistic set, obviously. It's basically on stage. It's going to look like a sound studio. We're going to have a special effects table or a sound effects table. I've got four sound effects artists who are going to be working in the show. They're also acting in the show. And then it's very, very minimalistic. And then what we're going to be doing is we're going to close curtain on that and reset the stage for Charlie Brown, a little 15-minute intermission, something like that. And then Lace's show is going to kick off, and then all the kids are going to get to go in there. And, you know, it's really exciting, because my show, It's a Wonderful Life, is heartwarming, but it's also, there's some pretty intense moments in there with George. And my actor, like, he occasionally brings me choked up, you know, listening to him. And I've heard him do it like 20 times already. And he still just throws it out there, and it's like, yeah, he's killing me. So it's really, really exciting to have that aspect of the show. And then we get to finish off on this really high Charlie Brown Christmas note that's just going to bring everybody right back up. And they're going to just, it's really exciting to see the whole thing, how it's going to come together. I'm just, I can't wait.
I think that kind of seems like it could be like a really cool showcase of just kind of Valley Performing Arts in general. You've got this kind of different medium that you're presenting, and then boom, we got the kids coming up to just blow your minds or whatever.
Yeah.
So it sounds like this might be kind of a newish endeavor, at least maybe on this level, for a radio production, especially doing it live on stage.
Yeah. As far as that goes, I don't believe that VPA has done a live radio show like this before. I think they've had some radio performances, but those were actually done on the radio. This is the first time I think that we're going to be seen doing it. And one of the things that I wanted to do was, you know, we had the option of either going with, you know, pre-recorded sound effects and just having the radio show, which is how I've seen it done so many times. Like, I watched 20 different versions of this because I hadn't seen the radio show before. I'd seen the movie, obviously. I think everybody has seen the movie. And then we, so I wanted to see how the radio show worked. And a lot of people use pre-recorded sound effects. And I didn't want to do that. So I've been doing all the research on Foley art, and I've got four Foley artists that are, you know, in the show as well, that are going to be doing all the sound effects live, only using technologies that existed in the 40s when this show took place.
Yeah.
So it's been challenging because some of the things like closing car doors and things like that, are they're not easy to reproduce and replicate. So, and we're still working on some of those things.
Yeah, it's kind of like reverting back to the golden age of radio a bit. What's your relationship to It's a Wonderful Life? Because, I mean, it's like you said, I feel like, you know, as Christmas starts coming around, even if you're just like flipping through channels, you're going to end up seeing it front to back somehow. Just, oh, yeah. You know, you'll end up seeing it. It doesn't seem like maybe it's a tired story to you at all.
Well, the funny thing was, is in doing the radio, live radio show, I started like researching the show It's a Wonderful Life and the movie and all these things. And the fact that it's a Christmas classic is so bizarre because it was actually a failed movie.
At the time.
In the theaters. Like, nobody really liked it when it first came out, but it was a Jimmy Stewart movie. And so people went to it, but it kind of died and fizzled. It was not a box office success. Mm-hmm. And so it came to Christmas time, and they really didn't have anything to put on the TV. So they thought, well, we'll just throw this kind of movie that nobody's really watching. It's a Christmas Eve. Well, it's a Christmas movie. We'll just throw it on there. And then it just exploded. Everybody loved it. And so it's one of those weird situations where definitely not a big, you know, splash in the theaters, but then had a revitalization in life on broadcast television.
Yeah.
At the Christmas time. So, yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, well, and so, like, kind of speaking of the classic aspects and stuff like this, like, are you, when you do something like this, are you trying to stay as faithful to the original story and concepts, or there may be some narrative liberties or even stuff that maybe you had to do just because it's radio?
So we kind of are a little bit restricted by licensing of how much we can change.
That makes sense.
But in the production notes that we got from there, it gives us quite a bit of leeway in like the sound effects and how those work and the music. The music is very open-ended. So super exciting thing that's actually happening for my show is the person who is playing piano in our show is actually setting the arrangements and writing original music for the production. There's a couple of public domain songs that we're going to use, but most of the sounds and most of the musical transitions that we're going to do are going to be original pieces written by the person playing the piano on stage. So we're doing all the music live, all the sound effects live. I mean, we can use things like plastics and electricity because those existed in the 40s, but we're not, you know, doing soundboard stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it does just kind of sound like you're trying to stick to the just original spirit of what you could experience when, you know, people were gathered around the radio and listening together.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, let's go over the schedule, the nitty-gritty about these productions, you know, the when, where, and how people can experience these.
Yeah, so our show is performing November 21st through December 14th on the weekends. Tickets are available at www.vpaalaska.org, or you can call 907-373-0125 to purchase tickets directly from the office.
Now, you want to make sure that you get tickets because the Christmas shows normally sell out. It's one of those things where we do actually have, it's kind of our biggest show, which was very exciting for me as well because it's the one show that everybody wants to go to.
Mm-hmm. We normally do 3 weekends. All the rest of our shows this year are 3 weekends, but for the Christmas show, we always add an extra because we tend to sell out.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for coming in. This was a super fun conversation to talk about some good old classic Christmas shows, but anything else that you folks would want to add, let them know before they show up?
Just wanted to thank you for having us on air. It's been exciting, and I actually learned a thing or two about Lisa today, which was fun.
Yeah.
You know, we've worked together on a few things now.
A couple times, yeah.
And look forward to working together with her again.
We'll have to have you back in so you can learn more about each other.
Exactly.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
You have a great day.
That was my conversation with Lisa Den Blaker and Sean Groshon, who are directing Valley Performing Arts' double feature of A Charlie Brown Christmas and an onstage radio production of It's a Wonderful Life. That runs Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays from November 21st through December 14th. We'll have more info on our webpage. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to our guests Mitchell Hansen, Catherine Easley, Nick Cooper, and Susan Wingrove Reed. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.